But you know, most people think that life in a wheelchair must be the worst thing in the world. That's not the way I see it. I'd imagine the worst thing in the world would be being on zombie takeout. Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, heard you missed us. We're back.
Yes. What an epic couple weeks that was. We didn't even talk about off the air about shenanigans and misery.
I was under the weather a couple weeks ago, and you had a much more interesting story.
So right. Yeah. No hot water for a long time. Yeah, that was fun. I never want to do that again.
And some work on your apartment. So yeah, you weren't exactly able to record.
Yeah.
So during that first week, when I was under the weather and needed a distraction, I finally decided to catch up on the MCU. I'd stopped with the Avengers because I just got tired of superheroes. But I figured 6 years is long enough. I had acquired copies of them. So
that was really 6 years ago, that first Avengers?
Avengers was 2012.
Holy shit.
So wow. I caught up on them. I just decided I had Iron Man 3, and I just decided to give it a shot. If, like me, you just got tired of superheroes at that point.
Of course.
Keep going. Push forward. They get better. I think with
I've taken them in small doses here and there.
With each, what do they call, phase, they do get a little better. Phase 2 is better than Phase 1. Phase 3 is even better.
Phase 3 is profit, right?
Black Panther's still my favorite. Infinity War is a close second. If it hasn't been spoiled for you, don't look for spoilers. It's been pretty spoiled, but I mean,
it has been.
That's what I say. If it hasn't been spoiled,
I honestly don't care.
Yeah, you're more of a Batman DC kind of guy.
Yeah, well, I used to be until they just keep bringing it back. Tell the same story over and over again.
Right. Well, that's one thing they did well with Spider-Man, no origin. They didn't do an origin. And Tom Holland is the best one yet. He's almost appropriately aged. He's like 21. But yeah, I would recommend jumping back in. If you got a little cape fatigue. Anyway, enough of that. On to this week's movie, which is from 1988, Talk Radio, continuing our Oliver Stone trilogy. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood and the Destroyers. Not gone, but mercifully forgotten.
And also brought to you by Jericho's Pizza. They're just trying to make a living. All right, so we have this sort of amalgamation of Howard Stern and Morton Downey Jr. and Bob Grant and Rush Limbaugh all rolled into one, sort of.
He actually based the character on Tom Lykus.
Oh, I remember Tom Lykus. Did you ever hear him?
Briefly, I hated him. He was on around the same time as I was listening to Opie and Anthony.
He was an utter hack. Yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah. I think that's giving way too much credit to Tom Lykus, honestly.
Well, and just his kind of mannerisms and his patter, I think, is all it was based on.
Now that makes sense, though, because there was a lot of, like, these weird, like, you know, we're going to hell in a handbasket sort of thing, and that is exactly the stuff Tom Lykus was pulling.
Yeah.
Right, okay. the one guy I forgot. Well, obviously. forgot him entirely. But anyway, so he's in a Texas market, yet he's kind of doing a New York show where he's just, you know, he's insulting the audience and stuff. Almost as much as Oliver Stone is insulting the audience in this throughout this, but you know, that's another story entirely. he's got this show, it's about to go national, and so he gets nervous, and he brings in his ex-wife for some reason. She sort of grounds him for a bit, but then they do this flashback of how they broke up, And a very unnecessary flashback, too, considering they explain what happened in the past, and then they show us what happened in the past that they and just told us.
And they kind of crowbar it in. It kind of catches you from out of nowhere.
Yeah, so it really didn't make any sense. And so for some reason, he becomes emotionally unhinged while on the air, kind of. Really what happens kind of in the last act is very confusing, because it's like he suddenly gets tired of the game. He suddenly is very like, I have an audience, but I don't know what my audience is, and why are they doing this? And it was just very, very utterly strange. And so his ex-wife decides, I'm going to throw him a lifeline and do the thing that we used to do in the old days and pretend to be a caller and give him an interesting call. And he takes it and he runs with it, but he's supposed to have, of course, played nice with her. And I'm not sure what he was supposed to do, actually. He was supposed to get back with her, but he wasn't supposed to get back with her, even though she'd moved on with her life and everything. None of it made any sense at the end. It just kind of just fell apart entirely. And so he goes off on her, gets, you know, to score points with the audience, of course, more people hate him for it. And he should have gone for that burger, because hilarity ensues.
And the film is based on the play of the same name by Bogosian, by Eric Bogosian, who is the lead actor,
yes,
and Tad Savinar. Portions of the film and play were based on the assassination of radio host Alan Berg in 1984 and the book Talked to Death, The Life and Murder of Alan Berg by Steven Singular. So this is partially based on a real story.
Right. The odd thing is, I mean, it is, aside from, you know, the murder and the political talk, it is practically the story of Ron Bennington before it happened, I believe, though. Because, I mean, the deal with him was that he was a comedy club owner, and they brought him in to promote the club, and he just wound up being the guy that took the job of the morning guys, and you know, that he's been on radio ever since for like over 30 years now.
Champlain, that's it. Barry Champlain is Bogosian's character.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a liberal, but he doesn't really sound like it off the top.
No.
Until he gets to the drugs. He's pro legalization, but aside from that, he sounds very conservative.
It felt an amalgamation between, I mean, there was definitely a Stern influence on this too.
Yeah.
Which, that's why it really didn't make any sense to have, you know, the shock jockery and the conservatism pulling together at the same time.
Well, there are conservative shock jocks. I mean,
are, true, but not in the same way. I mean, and right, you know, I mean, like half of Opie and Anthony, of course, you know, were very conservative. But just this whole we're going to hell in a handbasket thing, while you're leading the nation to hell in a handbasket yourself.
Well, I think that leads to the ending. You know, he has his dump your garbage on City Hall, you know, moment.
Yeah.
With I want to call him Chaz, because I think I subconsciously ripped Chaz off from Kent.
No kidding.
Again, it was completely unintentional. But Chaz is a character I did on the Tuesday Afternoon Show. Very similar to the movie. And I, watching this, forgot how much I liked Bogosian as an actor, because I was a big fan in the early 90s, but I hadn't really seen any of his stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's always been he's just always captivating.
Yeah.
A fantastic performer. If it wasn't for him, though, not just because he's the writer, you know, of the play, if it wasn't for him, I don't know if I could have made it through this, honestly.
Really? I think we're going to split on this one, which is surprising. As much as I liked Bogosian as an actor, I honestly can't tell if I liked Champlain or not.
No, he's not likable at all.
I mean, there were points where I was, I don't know if I ever really liked him. I was sympathetic at points, particularly at the end. But yeah, I don't know if I ever liked him. Loved all of the voice actors. He spends most of the movie in a room by himself interacting with voice actors.
Well, I think that's kind of the problem of the movie, though, is that they they're very cartoon-like. Yeah. I mean, in fact, you can tell they're obviously the same person.
Well, they're
playing different callers.
Well, it's two or three people probably, right? But it's satire.
It's kind of like these idiots that are listening to this person. I mean, really, it's a whole cross section of people that listen to these guys. You know, I listen to these guys. I mean, of course, I'm not a caller.
Right. Yeah, that's the difference.
But no, I mean, there's good callers and bad callers too.
But the good callers aren't that interesting. You know, it's the old Rollins bit. Do you want to watch the movie called Best Day Ever or a movie called Worst Day Ever?
Well, no. I mean, they're good callers that are good because, you know, they enhance the show and mm-hmm. you want to listen to them. And of course, there's idiots like this too that call in. Oh, yeah. But I mean, you don't get, if you had all these bad callers, you'd fire John C. Riley. For having these bad callers all coming in on one on top of the other.
He doesn't really screen very much. I've noticed that.
No. No screening whatsoever here.
And I did have to wonder how a radio host gets recognized in public so much. Because he goes to this basketball game and like 20 people are asking him for his autograph and such.
They plastered his picture everywhere.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Even when I was a big Opie and Anthony fan, I don't think I would have recognized them if I, you know, walked past them.
I mean, they, like, I remember as a kid, you had, like, the Stern and...
Yes, Stern's picture was all over the place, you're right.
The Stern and Imus, billboards and stuff, because you had Imus in the morning, Stern at night. Mm-hmm. The other thing about this, the radio thing is, how big could he have really been if he was, like, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning or... whatever time at night he was on here.
Well, he's on at night usually.
Right. We started out, they gave him a 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. shift. And then, I don't know, like, was he like right before midnight or something? I mean, he was late at night here when he's talking for this show that he's mm-hmm. doing.
Yeah.
These are really, I mean, I can't see a show going national from that time slot, you know? I mean, it's a very... At
that time, late 80s, basically in the 80s, I can see a national show at night easily. There were national shows at night that I listened to.
I mean, there's Delilah, I guess.
Yeah, at this point, you know, radio is practically dead now, so yeah.
Who's a human cyborg, really? I mean, Delilah.
Like, Idiot's Delight was like around the same time, you know, 8 to 10. Well, and I always listen to that on MMR.
Oh, yeah?
It was MMR or K-Rock, I forget. But that was a great show.
That is the thing about living in New Jersey, that most people from outside the area do not understand. You get both markets.
Yeah, you get Philly and New York.
Right. They don't understand that. They think it's either, you know, I don't know what people think about it. I'm still trying to explain to people out here that it's not like here, well, where everything's monolithic.
Well, yeah, you're in Chicago. It is its own market.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The options from Jersey aren't nearly as interesting.
No, so, well, wait a minute. There's
Seton Hall. This is one example.
Right, right. And, you know, old 106.3. And, I mean, you had a lot of different choices to listen to back in the day. Not so anymore.
But the thing is, there were some radio shows at night, particularly in the 80s and my teens, I listened to a lot of radio.
Yeah.
Didn't have the internet and, you know, but not yet. So I did listen to a lot of shows at night. I can see, and particularly some talk shows. So I can see one going national easily.
Got a big contract. I mean, first of all, if he was that big, they would put him on one of the drive spots, you know?
That's a fair point.
Like, if before putting him national, they would put him on a drive. I mean, either afternoon or morning. Like Stern, like I remember, he was starting out as like an evening drive or afternoon drive.
Okay.
And then,
but
you know,
he always lived in the morning drive for me. For the time I did listen to him.
Right, but yeah, the lineup was Imus in the morning, Stern in the afternoon drive, and like Rocky Allen somewhere in the middle there, I think, or before Soupy Sales or whatever.
I would say before my time because I'm slightly older than you, but that was before I had any, you know, I was listening to them at all.
I listened to radio a long way back.
Speaking of Stern, there are parts of the movie that remind me a lot of Private Parts.
Yes. But he's much more of an asshole than Stern, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And it's we have this whole flashback of how he got into radio. So that's, inherently going to mirror or going to be very similar to Private Parts.
Yeah, that is very strange how the two reflect. But I guess the story is just so common, like.
And he did move around a lot. Stern went from like three or four different cities.
Well, right.
He was coming up in the ranks.
That's entirely the reason.
Champlain just really stayed in one place.
That's entirely the reason why I never pursued the career either. Yeah. I mean, it's dreadful. I mean,
right.
you're picking up and moving for like not even $30,000 a year. I mean, it's just, yeah. I had people that tried, they worked in like the Wilkes-Barre market and stuff, but it's not an easy life. And I just knew that right away. And just no, not for me.
Now we do get to now one of my few criticisms, because I really like the movie. We're gonna, like I said, we're probably gonna split on this one. His ex-wife is a bit of a caricature.
Yes,
she was played
by. That's the problem with the movie, though. There are so many caricatures here.
Well, the callers were intended to be. She's a bit of a caricature. It was Ellen Green who always kind of played the same role. And then shortly after she's introduced, we get into the unnecessary flashback. And I have to ask why a producer of a radio show would be wearing a rainbow wig and oversized glasses at one point, and then minutes later, a football helmet.
Oh, come on, though. That part.
It was funny, but it made no sense.
Why did we cram the broom closet full of people?
That's true.
There was just, it's just... Sometimes shows just do that. Life of their own. I mean, that was the only thing that I would think. I mean, he would have had probably a room just crammed full of people.
Yeah.
And I mean, not once did they worry about someone cursing on the radio or anything either.
This is true. They didn't mention a delay at all.
They talk about standards and practices and stuff, but I mean, they're bringing in the stoner kid.
Yeah.
The first thing he's going to do is yell, fuck. Come on.
And just to quickly explain, the broom closet was our college radio station. It was literally in a broom closet.
Yes, it was. And we would stuff it full of people while we were on the air. And just, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, Kent. Unfortunately, he really did represent the future in a lot of ways.
Well, I think there was stuff going on in the present right there, you know?
And Kent really, I have to say, wasn't a caricature. I knew Kents. I knew quite a few Kents in high school. Kent was the guy who thought LA Guns was the shit until he heard Peace Sells and became the big Megadeth fan, and then suddenly became obsessed with GNR as soon as he heard Appetite, or Welcome to the Jungle specifically, and like just tried to mirror everything about Axl Rose. I knew a lot of Kents.
Sure, and I mean, I can't blame Barry for bringing him on, too.
Oh, no,
it was kind of a brilliant thing. But then to get in there and expect him to converse about, the state of affairs in the country? Like, what are you, high? Why would you? I mean, you do that as a joke. You have a goof. You laugh. This kid's an idiot. Whatever. But don't like be shocked that he doesn't know anything. This is just disgusting.
Well, like, I think that moment for me, because that's when the movie really sold me, was that turn after Kent. Because I think he thought it was all a gag, and he thought these people weren't real until he's face to face with Kent, who really is who he claims to be. And it just shocked him into sense, and he starts to have this sort of crisis of conscience.
How could he not know that?
They're on the other side of a phone.
This kid pulled the joke with him, that a repeated joke that his girlfriend is dead.
Yeah.
So much so that the suits, I mean, and honestly, really, everybody in here is just, nobody's an actual person. You have the suits, you have, the talent. I mean, but anyway.
Though it is one of my best, one of the better performances from Alec Baldwin that I've seen.
He's had his moments. There's some good ones in them. But yeah, I mean, this one's decent. I mean, it's no Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, okay, fair point. I forgot about that one.
there isn't a single goddamn place that doesn't say that talk about coffee is for closers.
Right. And, yeah. And,
you know.
I forgot about King Larry, didn't I?
Yeah. To this day. But anyway, he was pulling this joke that his girlfriend was dead. I mean, that's the joke. Yes, he's pulling a joke that his girlfriend is dead, convincingly enough that the suits were nervous that and they should have called the authorities, and they were trying to, you know, he was also talking with the rapist, and he knew the rapist was real too. There's no way somebody could be that dumb and not know what his audience is.
He didn't think the rapist was real until about 5 minutes into the call.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't think he really bought it. He just was keeping him talking while they traced it just to be safe.
Yeah.
Which is what you're supposed to do.
Cover their ass legally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, and yeah. She's trying to basically talk him into, you know, where did it happen? Where is the body? If there is a body, you know, where are you? Trying to, you know, get specifics out of him.
So I guess the problem is they seem to believe that you become popular or have a popular talk show just by dumb luck, you know, like you don't have to know your audience or you know, what your audience wants or who your audience is. You just kind of luck into it. I mean, maybe there is luck to it.
I think, Ken, like I said earlier, it's the dump your garbage on the City Hall steps.
Yeah. Moment.
WKRP in Cincinnati reference for those who don't know it. You know, Johnny Fever told his audience to dump their garbage on City Hall steps because he didn't believe that they would do it. Nobody really pays attention to him. And then suddenly everybody dumped their garbage on City Hall steps. You know, Kent was that moment of realizing this shit is real. By the way, there's a mention of Lucille Ball, and he says, you know, Lucille Ball is probably dead by now.
Yeah.
She died the year after the movie was made. I looked it up just out of curiosity. Although there were a couple of callers after Kent that I think got a little heavy-handed and really just a little too heavy on the foreshadowing.
All right. I mean, Con, if you can't see where this is going, like I said, he's doing like a New York market show in Texas. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think is going to happen here? Seriously.
But I loved the ending monologue where he basically just tells the audience off.
Yes.
There's a great quote. Marvelous technology is at our disposal. Instead of reaching to new heights, we try to see how far down we can go, how deep into the muck we can immerse ourselves.
That is, you know, it's
that,
really...
That line was prescient.
that whole speech at the end with the room spinning is really the only thing that really... was good in this movie. I mean, it was the reason to come and see it, you know?
You put it a brain for me, I'll put it that way.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
And I did like the dead air, because after that speech, after that rant, he just stays quiet.
Oh, definitely, of course.
Yeah, he after for like a good 30, they tell him he has 60 seconds left. It was probably like 20 seconds in actuality, but 20 seconds of dead air, you really feel.
I mean, it's not until you listen to like, you know, Ron Bennington stuff where you realize how silence in radio is fucking amazing at times. Like when his host is having a nervous breakdown or whatever, or just some sort of meltdown, and he's just, rather than keeping the air filled, he's just letting the silence hang there and you just hear the mutter. And by the way, Ron Bennington's latest show has Eric Bogosian saying, "Get your hand out of the bowl of Fritos."
Oh,
Paul Bennington.
Okay. I looked on Wikipedia. They list a bunch of bands that have sampled the movie, and apparently, you know, lots of other places have too. Makes sense for a radio show, particularly a talk radio show, to sample.
Right, but they actually got him when he was on the air to say, you know, call Bennington, to do the line, only to call Bennington instead.
And the next host after Barry mentions a mentally disturbed man in the parking lot. I love how subtly they work that in.
Yeah.
No, it just kind of goes past you. I just wish I could remember if I was shocked by it the first time I saw the movie.
No.
I don't know if I was or not. I can't remember.
I don't think I was, really.
I probably saw this for the first time in like 90, 91.
I think so, too. And I mean... honestly, it influenced me too, going into radio, so I think it had the opposite effect of what Oliver Stone was looking for. I'm like, yeah, fuck, I would have pissed people off too.
Now, I counted 11 shots from the gun. from a snub in his revolver.
So it's one of those Atari 2600 guns, huh?
Or I think they were just repeating the same shot. I'm not sure.
12 shooter. What?
And I think Space Hog ripped off the closing music.
Oh, yeah?
It starts with this kind of rhythmic dial tone sound.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That
sounds a lot like the beginning of Meantime? Not In the Meantime is his helmet. Yeah. Meantime by Space Hog. I think they borrowed it. I did like all of the callers kind of, I'll say, eulogizing him in quotes.
Yeah.
Talking about Barry. Notice something interesting. In the credits, it says that Bad to the Bone was performed by Michael Weatherwax.
What?
It sounds just like the original George Thorogood version.
They ripped off George Thorogood for this.
They did a sound alike, or a cover, which they probably could get the rights for. Maybe there was a rights issue with Thorogood's record company.
Oh, come on. He sold that fucking thing to everybody.
Well, but this was 88. Maybe he hadn't by then. Now he has. Now I'm sure you could get it for $5, but you know, at the time, maybe there was some kind of legal issue and they had to have somebody cover it, but it's a damn good cover.
Or how about using Disco Inferno when he said, play Saturday Night Fever?
I didn't catch that.
He said, okay. We're going to play Saturday Night Fever 10 times in a row, and then Disco Inferno comes on. I mean, that's clearly a rights thing, too. They couldn't get the rights to one, and then but they got Disco Inferno. Close enough.
Well, frankly, I prefer Disco Inferno, but... On to sequels and remakes. I think this is right for a remake. In the era of podcasting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit, man. What if there's like a fan of some movie I shot on waiting outside for me?
In the era of podcasting, some of which do have live callers, this thing is ripe for a remake. And I think Bogosian can still pull it off.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't thought of that. He remakes his own movie.
Well, he didn't direct it, but I would like to see what he could do. I mean,
without Oliver Stone.
Because, you know, he doesn't need to be young to pull off the role.
Because I really blame a lot of this on Oliver Stone, the shortcomings of this, the cartoonishness.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend Stone by any means.
Like, after seeing Natural Born Killers and then seeing this, you can kind of see where, like, the cartoonishness comes into play here, too. And it's like, if he was so obsessed with cartoons, and now cartoons are so in vogue... Why doesn't he just make movies like this now? I mean, he'd be in fashion.
I guess I'd like to see a remake. He could do it. I don't know who I would bring in to direct, because I don't think Bogosian directs. At least not movies. So I don't know who I would bring in to direct who would be right for it. Scorsese comes to mind.
Wow. Yeah.
He's so, more action based.
Yeah, I was gonna say he does bigger films now. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm just thinking of somebody who I think would fit the project, but I don't. I'm, you know,
have him doing it across multiple dimensions. Just have Shane Carruth come in to do it.
Oh God, a Shane Carruth video. Oh my.
the waves are coming back, and he's really talking in a different vibe.
On to brains. You did talk me down a little, but I still have to recommend it for that landing monologue. I gotta go for.
I love Bogosian's performance. I love that monologue. I do love how they hit on the haters. That's one thing we didn't get to.
Yeah.
The weird. I don't think it was even really examined before this. Now, the more I think about it, that there's this culture of haters out there.
Yeah. Trolls. Who,
well, yeah, maybe that's what you would call them.
And frankly, radio callers were the original trolls.
But these people that absolutely hate something, but still watch and listen.
Okay, yeah, in that sense too, yeah. And, yeah, right. It definitely goes back to talk radio.
Yeah.
How many people hate Stern but listen religiously, or did? I don't know if he's still at it yet.
Yeah, he's still at it. Very limited, but he's still at it. Mm-hmm. I think like 4 days a week, every other week sort of deal, kind of Carson thing.
But a lot of people hated him but listened religiously.
But I mean, it also goes into music and television shows too. There's plenty of bands and TV shows and whatnot that people, you know, they absolutely despise, and yet there they are watching every episode and listening to every album, and you're just kind of like, why would you do this to yourself?
I definitely don't do that with bands, with music. I have a couple of guilty pleasure shows, but again, they're guilty pleasures. They're not things I hate.
Yeah.
Actually, there's one guilty pleasure song that I will take to my grave, but I actually do like the song. So I can't imagine hate watching anything or hate listening to anything.
But yeah, there's people that do that. I just don't understand either. Once I'm like, when I'm like, I don't like something, I'm out. That's it. I'm done.
I listened to Stern for most of a year, and then one day was like, what the fuck am I doing? And changed the station and never went back.
I liked Stern when he was on Terrestrial. I mean, it was very, he'd have some fantastic interviews that you wouldn't get anywhere else. You'd also have a lot of filler though to go through, a lot of him berating his staff and stuff, and it's like, who gives a fuck about this after a while?
I think Hank was on when I finally came to my senses and changed the station.
the angry <dwarf. laughs> But yeah, so, I mean, it's an art that's dead, the whole mm-hmm. talk radio thing anyway. I mean, there's very few people left.
That's what podcasting is now.
Yeah, pretty much.
It moved to the internet and became podcasting.
Yes, Stern has two channels and everything on Sirius XM, but I mean, like I said, he's hardly on live anymore. Right. O and A are split.
Yeah.
Opie's pretty much just doing a podcast, and Anthony's got like his own home spun video thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so where are they all now? But anyway. For this, so I'm going to give it 3 because there's so much to it, but goddamn Stone and his overreaching cartoon characters. I mean, the people that were listening were also people,
Yeah. Admittedly, I'm only recommending it for Bagation.
And kind of, you wonder, like, why people would actually have listened to this show or called in. Because he just talked over people anyway, like a good talk show host kind of lets at least the people hang themselves some and brings that out, where it was just this guy. So yeah, 3.
All right. So what have we learned?
We learned that John C. McGinley was young once.
I remember him that age. It didn't really shock me, but he didn't look much different when I started watching Scrubs. So anyway, I learned that sticks and stones can break your bones, but words cause permanent damage. All right, that's it for talk radio. If you enjoyed this video, please give it a like and subscribe if you haven't. Until next time, and we'll be concluding the Oliver Stone trilogy with The Hand. I think our choice to exclude Platoon was kind of a bit of a hatchet job, but... Like I said, until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.